From WBUR in Boston, I'm Bill Littlefield, and this is NPR's Only a Games. There was a verdict in the Barry Bonds trial this week, but is the government's investigation of athletes who dope even close to over? Ahead on Only a Game, a leery look forward, also an NBA postseason preview, and the story of Kent Cook's double life as captain of a college baseball team and mayor of bustling Loretto, Minnesota. Also ahead, wheelchair racer Ernst Van Dyke goes for his 10th Boston Marathon win.
If somebody's going to win this, they're going to have to take it from me. I'm not going to give it to him. So it's going to be a race to the wire, and we'll have to see how it turns out.
Stay tuned.
Major funding for Only a Game comes from Oliver Wyman, an international strategy consulting firm. With 3,000 professionals worldwide, Oliver Wyman serves global 1,000 companies. OliverWyman.com.
This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. If you were hoping for closure in the Barry Bonds trial, you're out of luck. Wednesday, a federal jury in San Francisco convicted baseball's all-time home run leader on one charge of obstruction of justice, but deadlocked on three counts of perjury. That prompted the defense to move to have the lone conviction thrown out. The parties will return to court for a hearing next month. Meanwhile, the trial of former Major League pitcher Roger Clemens on similar charges is scheduled for this summer. Lance Williams is a reporter for California Watch's Center for Investigative Reporting. He also is the co-author of Game of Shadows, Barry Bonds, Balco, and the steroid scandal that rocked professional sports. Lance, welcome back to Only a Game.
It's my pleasure.
Do you have a sense of why the jury convicted Barry Bonds on the obstruction of justice charge, but not on the charges of perjury?
Yeah, and it gets down to what often happens in jury deliberations. They had to make arrangements to satisfy a holdout juror. There was one female juror who initially was a guilty vote on one of the perjury counts. She then changed her mind after she slept on it and said she would only vote to convict on obstruction of justice. And so rather than continue in a deadlock situation, that's the one the jury returned.
The hearing on whether the obstruction of justice charge will stand is set for May 20th. What do you expect to come out of that proceeding?
More litigation. I'd be a little surprised, though, if the judge did anything substantial at that time. This issue of how obstruction was being charged and what the jury instruction should be and so forth was heavily, heavily litigated before the trial. Bonds has six frontline attorneys and maybe 11 overall. They even had a motion on the use of the word and versus or in one particular sentence of the jury instruction. So I'd be surprised, because she's considered a lot of issues about this, I'd be surprised if she does anything about it.
Barry Bonds was indicted back in 2007, and the grand jury testimony at the center of the case against him happened back in 2003. After all this time and all this effort and all this money spent, even with one guilty verdict, is the result a failure as far as government prosecutors are concerned?
Oh, I think they're probably pretty happy with the result, and I think they ought to be. You know, they lost so much evidence as a result of the trainer refusing to testify, Greg Anderson, Bonds' trainer. They took doping calendars and positive steroid tests for Bonds out of the trainer's house when they raided it. The judge wouldn't let them use that evidence unless the trainer testified. And, you know, it really, really limited the information available to the jury. To get a conviction anyway, that's pretty good work. And I think if the judge wants to start fooling around with the conviction, they're going to retry at least on one of the counts.
Former Major League pitcher Roger Clemens is scheduled to stand trial in July in Washington, D.C. for obstruction of Congress, perjury, and other charges. What are the key differences between that case and the Bonds trial?
Clemens, of course, volunteered to get indicted in a way, whereas Bonds wasn't eager to. And I don't mean to be flippant, but if you recall, Clemens insisted on testifying in front of Congress where he could deny under oath that he had used steroids. And Bonds was subpoenaed in front of a grand jury along with 30 other athletes, and he just didn't want to be there. The other difference is that Clemens' jury is not going to be a bunch of people who followed his career closely. You know, Giants fans, I mean, Bonds was a hometown hero. Clemens never played in Washington.
Do you expect that either Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens will serve any time in jail?
I don't know the dynamic with Clemens because I don't know anything about his judge. Bonds' judge has been reluctant to send sports figures to prison for lying about steroids. She's tried two of them, a bicycle racer, Tammy Thomas, and the Olympic track coach, Trevor Graham. Jury's convicted both of them on a felony count, and in both cases, the judge opted for house arrest. Federal guidelines suggest he could get a couple of years on this conviction if the judge wanted to do that.
Federal investigator Jeff Novitzky is the driving force behind both the Bonds and Clemens cases. He's also indicated that he's looking into allegations that cyclist Lance Armstrong used performance-enhancing drugs. Do you expect that to be Novitzky's final steroids case?
Novitzky's a Food and Drug Administration investigator now. You know, he's got tremendous expertise and experience now from, you know, Balco. He started on that in 2002. And this is what they'll use him for if the Justice Department wants to continue to play this role in elite sports. I think the test will be Armstrong. If these guys put together a case and bring it in, then you'll know if this Justice Department wants to do more cases like that. If they get turned down, if you never hear of an Armstrong indictment, then maybe that is the end of the, at least a federal foray into enforcing the steroid laws against users, that is elite athletes.
Lance Williams is a reporter for California Watch's Center for Investigative Reporting, also the co-author of Game of Shadows, Barry Bonds, Balco, and the Steroid Scandal That Rocked Professional Sports. Lance, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Hey, I really appreciate the opportunity.
After the 2007 season, Major League Baseball announced that for the fourth year in a row, the business had broken its attendance record. The so-called steroid scandal apparently didn't hurt business any. Last year, Major League Baseball announced that for the third consecutive year, overall attendance had dropped. It's unlikely that the absence of Barry Bonds from the game had anything to do with the slump. Maybe the prosecutions of Bonds and Roger Clemens have been necessary to the defense of the rule of law. Maybe they've been a waste of time and resources. History's verdict is likely to be that even within the small world of baseball, Bonds and Clemens were not as important as they thought they were. And without naming names, given all the moralizing, legitimate and otherwise, we might further suppose that any player who embraced better hitting or pitching through chemistry will conclude in the end that he was not as significant within his profession as he would have been had he played the game to the best of his natural ability and let it go at that. At first glance, Kent Cook might seem a typical fifth-year senior college baseball player. The infielder from St. Cloud State University in Minnesota has dreams of helping the 30th-ranked Huskies go a long way this season, and he's thinking about life after graduation. But what sets Cook apart is his current side gig. Only a Game's Greg Eklund has our profile.
Loretto is about a 45-minute drive from the MAC, the Municipal Athletic Complex, where the St. Cloud State Huskies, an NCAA Division II team, play their home baseball games.
Number 7, Kent Cook.
The Huskies are playing an afternoon doubleheader against conference foe Bemidji State. St. Cloud won the first game 9-4. They're trying to complete the sweep with a 9-0 lead in the ninth. But when Bemidji rallies for two runs, the finish of the second game becomes a concern to Kent Cook. It's past 6 o'clock. That makes it tougher for Mayor Kent Cook to make it to the 7 o'clock start of the city council meeting he'll preside over in Loretto, a town of about 650. It's a dilemma that City Councilman Clark Lohr, also the mayor pro tem, was ready for this spring.
We've had him miss one council meeting thus far, and, you know, things ran smoothly without him. You know, he's there and he's at the meetings talking to staff on a regular basis. So he's as involved as he can be, and the school year should be wrapping up soon, and we expect great things from him.
We did strike item number 3 from the agenda, overtime policy.
It's about 10 past 7. Cook walks into Loretto City Hall in the back of the fire station while the council is in session and takes the center seat at the head table. Outside, Cook changed from his baseball uniform to a gray polo shirt, black dress slacks, and black leather shoes. He is now in his role as mayor and he attacks the agenda like he would a fastball down the middle.
All right, and moving forward, recognition awards.
It has been this kind of whirlwind since Cook was elected last fall.
The first couple weeks after the election period, it got pretty busy with different things going on, just kind of a crash course learning experience, if you will. But right now, I would say, yeah, just finishing up school and getting that all over with. We're in our conference season and rolling with that, playing, you know, six games a week and staying busy with that. And luckily, we've had some home games finally, so don't have to travel as much. But then running back and forth between Loretto and St. Cloud and doing all that fun stuff.
Before the November election, Cook had a difficult time convincing his Husky teammates he was serious about running for mayor. It didn't register with his roommate, relief pitcher Ryan Schwenke, until the election results were out.
It's just kind of hard to take that kind of serious. I mean, the mayor of a town in itself, but I know he could do it. He's managed his time pretty well with being captain of the team and his schoolwork.
Cook's class load is light, with only the 3 credit hours he needs to graduate next month. He's a finance major, which helps when Cook examines the Loretto City budget. What prompted his commitment to politics?
The rumor was around town that no one wanted to do it, and I felt like that was pretty sad that no one would want to step up to the plate and take on this responsibility. So just decided to throw my name in the hat, and turned out I was running unopposed on the ballot until the last week of the election period. So got a little taste of small-town politics right away.
Tom Van Buzekom, a former mayor in the 80s, decided to add his name to the ballot as a write-in candidate. But Cook still prevailed in the election, winning 61% of the votes. He says St. Cloud State baseball coach Pat Dolan was also caught off guard.
He ended up calling me because it was on his Facebook page. You know how kids are. Sometimes they put stuff on Facebook just as joking around and stuff.
Dolan had another concern, eligibility. Would Cook's senior season be jeopardized by a paid political position?
We had all the compliance people thinking, gee, this is the first ever for them, too. It's my first in 23 years of coaching, and, you know, there's no issues with it, with NCAA compliance, and I think it's a good deal. I think that when the NCAA actually found out about it, it's kind of one of those feel-good stories.
Cook batted .333 last season for the Huskies, who were one game away from reaching the NCAA Division II College World Series. This season, Cook's average has dipped to around .250. His collegiate baseball career is winding down, but is Cook's political career just revving up?
At this point, I really haven't thought about it too much. I enjoy the city level, the small-town politics. I really haven't thought too much into advancing the state level or anything above that.
It sounds already like he's mastering the art of politics. For now, with gavel in hand, Cook recognizes the motion to adjourn.
Motion carries.
St. Cloud State hosts Winona State and a conference game today in St. Cloud. For Only a Game, I'm Greg Eklund.
It's 19 minutes past the hour.
Have you ever worn the mask?
A soccer player can earn a yellow card by fouling another player or by falling over without any discernible cause. And in a recent game, Neymar, the Brazilian star who plays for Santos, earned himself a yellow card for celebrating a goal by whipping out a paper mask of himself and putting it on his face upside down. Since it was the second yellow card Neymar had earned from referee Roberto Silveira, Neymar left the pitch. In fairly short order, he was followed by various other players who'd also dismayed Mr. Silveira. Santos finished the game with only 8 men, but 3 goals, while the opposition, Colo-Colo, had 9 men, but just 2 goals. I'm Bill Littlefield. Ahead on Only a Game, some of the nation's most talented student-athletes spend the weekend happily collecting trash and planting flowers. But first, the NBA playoffs begin today. And what would the opening of the real basketball season be without some good hoops talk with Fox Sports' Kevin Hinch? Kevin, welcome back to Only a Game.
Great to be here, Bill.
Given the fuss in L.A. over the past couple of weeks, let's start with the Lakers. They lost 5 out of their last 7 regular season games. Does this give New Orleans the edge it needs to pull off a first-round upset of the defending champs?
That's a good one, Bill.
You need to stop. Don't start laughing till I finish the question.
No. I mean, if the Lakers have proven anything, it's that they know when to flip the switch, except on Kobe Bryant's mute button when the camera's on him. I don't think the Lakers have a lot to worry about in that first-round matchup.
Well, as you suggested, it has been a bad week for Kobe Bryant. He was fined $100,000 for hurling a homophobic slur at a referee on Tuesday. He apparently will appeal. Wise choice?
No, there's high-def videotape of the incident. You know, Kobe's big mistake was he let the world get a glimpse of his real personality once again. I think he's done a very good job of hiding that over the last few years. But let's talk basketball.
The San Antonio Spurs locked up the number one spot in the West, and they will face the Memphis Grizzlies. Are Tim Duncan et al. Loaded for bear? And I apologize before you have a chance to say anything in response to that inexcusable pun.
Well, you know, I am not deviating from my not being on the Spurs bandwagon all year. I never thought this team had a chance to go all the way. And if there's one first-round upset, and I don't think there are going to be any, actually, but if there's one that I'm mildly suggesting, it would be this Grizzlies team, a 1-8 seed, upsetting the Spurs.
In the other two Western Conference series, Dallas will face Portland and Oklahoma City will face Denver. Are any of these teams capable of a long playoff run?
Oklahoma City definitely intrigues me. The Mavericks were intriguing the last time I spoke to you, Bill, but that intrigue has gone away and they've started to look exactly like the Dallas Mavericks again. But the Thunder intrigue, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, I just think, keep them in any series. And that, unlike the Hornets, the first-round bye that the Lakers have received, I don't think anybody wants to match up with the Thunder.
The Boston Celtics will play the New York Knicks beginning tomorrow. Some call this the renewal of a rivalry. Do you regard it that way?
Others call it an easy second-round matchup for someone else. I don't really see it as a renewal of a rivalry, but I would like to point out that somehow Kendrick Perkins has now become as important to the Celtics as Bill Russell, John Havlicek, and Larry Bird were. Somehow the departure of Kendrick Perkins is to blame for everything that's gone wrong with the Celtics since the trade, even though they're the lowest scoring team in the NBA since he left, and he couldn't score, but it's all about Perk. To me, it's all about the fact that his departure just happened to coincide with all those old legs hitting the wall. I think they'll skirt, get by the Knicks because the Knicks don't play defense, but that'll be the end of the road for the Celtics.
The Chicago Bulls locked up the number one conference spot this week. They face Indiana in the first round, and they would seem to be the favorite to come out of the East. You agree?
Well, they're certainly going to crush that terrible Pacers team, and then they'll win their second-round matchup, and I see them playing in the finals. But I'm not backing off my preseason pick, which we'll now get to as we talk about the Miami Heat.
Well,
I'm
first,
doing your segues now, Bill.
I very much appreciate it. But first, I need you to just dismiss Philadelphia, Orlando, and Atlanta, okay?
Okay. Real quick, Doug Collins, Coach of the Year. They're not going to beat the Heat. Orlando gets by the Hawks, but somehow, even though I thought that getting Jason Richardson and Turkoglu back would help the Magic, they just look worse than ever. I don't think they're a threat. So now on to the Heat.
Yeah, go ahead. Now it's time. Give me what you got.
You've got a guy in Dwayne Wade who single-handedly won a championship, a guy in LeBron James who single-handedly got a team to the finals, and you've got a shadow of the guy who used to be Chris Bosh playing with them. And I just think that experience is going to be the difference in the conference finals against the Bulls.
And then what happens?
In the finals?
Yes.
We're doing it all right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Why not?
I'm going to stick to my preseason prediction. You can roll the tape. Miami Heat over the Los Angeles Lakers.
Well, it's got to be a popular prediction because LeBron James' jersey very recently became the league's bestseller. So, hey, even if the Heat doesn't make it all the way to the finals and win the whole thing, team officials are happy, right?
Well, I would hope so. I mean, it's the great experiment. Could these three guys play together? Obviously, Bosch is taking a secondary role, but I just think, barring a rolled ankle, I mean, obviously the Heat have no margin for error because they are a 2.5-man team, but I do think those two guys make the difference, and the Miami Heat will raise their first banner with the new trio.
I want to give you a proposition to consider, Kevin. Is it fair to say the luckiest fans in the league right now are fans of the Cleveland Cavaliers because they get to root against anybody who plays Miami?
No, because the Miami Heat are going to win the NBA championship. They are the unluckiest people in the world, those woebegone Cleveland fans. Oh, my heart goes out to them. You know I wanted LeBron to stay. You know, I won't be rooting for the Heat. I will be in spirit with those Cleveland fans rooting against the Heat, except for the part where I get to brag that I was right all along.
The NBA canceled its Las Vegas Summer League and its internship program. Do we need those actions to know that the league is serious about a possible lockout?
Well, all signs certainly point to it, which is too bad. But I think the team in New Orleans is probably the best sign that we're headed towards some kind of a cleanse, shall I say. You just can't be hemorrhaging that much money and not have to rectify the situation.
And the rectification in this case would necessitate a lockout?
Well, my answer to all these things is contraction. Fewer teams, better players on each team, but I think we're probably heading down the lockout road.
Kevin Hench covers a range of subjects for Fox Sports, and he joins Only a Game from time to time to talk pro hoops. Kevin, thank you very much for speaking.
Enjoy the playoffs, Bill. It's going to be great.
Where do you want to put that one? You want to put it over there then?
Yeah.
Last Saturday morning at the University of Hartford Magnet School in Hartford, Connecticut, Caroline Dixon and Jordan Farrell were planting flowers. Caroline Dixon, a student at the University of Hartford, is a soccer player from Manchester, England. Jordan Farrell, a student at the Magnet School on the university's campus, plays soccer, softball, and basketball.
You're going to have to dig a hole now. That's all you.
Is
it hard?
Yeah.
You want some help?
Yeah.
The planting was part of a community service day in which students from the University of Hartford, Boston University, the University of Albany, and the University of Maryland in Baltimore, and the other five schools of the America East Conference worked with elementary and secondary school students on various projects, landscaping, trash collection, painting, and so on. Some of the benefits, according to 7-year-old University of Hartford Magnet School student Nico Reese, were obvious.
We're cleaning up trash to throw so we could clean up the world so animals don't die.
Another less obvious benefit from this association between the college athletes who serve as mentors and the young students with whom they regularly meet is the establishment of a bond between the two. The program in which the college and younger students are involved is called College for Every Student, CFES for short, and according to University of Hartford Assistant Athletics Director Alexandra Morley, who helped recruit the flower-planting soccer players, evidence of the connections forged between the mentors and the students with whom they work and play has been dramatic.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just to see some of the kids who have mentors to run into the arms of their mentors here has been such a great sight, and they're so excited, and our student-athletes are being great influences on them, and I can't think that it's anything but a huge success.
In this case, huge may be an understatement. According to the College for Every Student's own statistics, 97% of the youngsters who've graduated from high school after having been paired with college athletes under the auspices of the program have, in fact, found their way to college. Mike Lynch, the director of athletics at Boston University and a member of the board of directors of College for Every Student, regards the athletes in the America East Conference as role models who can have a significant impact on the children they mentor.
We've utilized our student athletes, who many times come from either privileged backgrounds or backgrounds where, certainly not backgrounds where they wouldn't have had an opportunity to go to school, like a lot of these young people that we're impacting today. And so for us, it's an opportunity on both sides of the fence, if you will. Our students have an opportunity to interact with people who they might not otherwise meet, and the young people within the CFES program have an opportunity to come to a campus like Boston University, and actually see that something like this is possible.
Mike Lynch can address that latter opportunity from personal experience. Though Boston University has only been involved in the CFES program for 3 years, the seed for his enthusiasm for the effort was planted when he was still an undergraduate at Rollins College in Florida. As Mike Lynch tells it, one afternoon during his junior year, he was leaving his dorm when he was approached by a woman who had walked 3 miles across town to the campus on a 95-degree day, trailing two little boys behind her.
And the mother approached me, and all she asked me to do was to take a look at my dorm room. And I didn't know exactly what she was getting at, but I said, sure. I walked her upstairs, and she had two young boys with her, a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old boy. And both of them walked in my dorm room, and their jaws dropped to the ground and said, wow, Mama, if this is what college is like, I'm going to go to college someday.
On the same day during which the athletes from the University of Hartford were planting flowers at the Magnet School on their campus, athletes from Boston University were helping students at the Jackson Mann School in Boston clean up their building and the grounds around it. Among those athletes were rowers Hannah Rooney and Shute Clem, who'd had no problem showing up early on a Saturday morning.
Well, we both actually had races this morning, so I was already up at 6:30, and I think
you... I was up at 5:30 this morning.
So we were awake already. Early mornings aren't a new thing for anybody, and doing something useful, I think, is better worth my time.
According to Noah Fader, who has been a program director and coordinator for CFES for 2 years, though that attitude is representative, CFES is active well beyond the schools of the America East Conference.
We work with 140 schools in 23 states all over the country, and we set up programs in our three core practices, mentoring, leadership through service, and pathways to college, with the goal of all of our students wanting to go to college and being excited about going to college and giving them the skills to succeed when they get there.
On Saturday, the Jackson Mann School students participating in the day of service were accompanied by their assistant principal, Anita Moore, who is a booster of the CFES program.
Absolutely. It's gotten our kids onto college campuses. It's gotten them to know about the admissions process, financial aid process, what college life is like, how to manage their time in college. Gives them that knowledge before they get into high school, you know, things to work with before they really need it. So they can spend time over the next few years exploring a little bit more and make good decisions as they prepare for college.
All this preparation and role modelship, this community service and beautification and expanding the horizons of children whom CFES has identified as underserved is fine and noble stuff, of course. Certainly what these soccer players and rowers have been doing presents a welcome contrast to the ugly stories in which athletes are sometimes involved. But what was going on in Hartford and Boston last weekend wasn't all work and no play. This became apparent to me when I asked University of Hartford soccer player Christina Ling about her relationship with the youngster whom she's been mentoring.
Well, my buddy Keaton, he's a lot of fun. I leave every time with a smile on my face. He's super smart and beats me in chess every time, so it's kind of frustrating. But it's just nice to be able to help someone out, and every time I leave, I'm just, like, happier.
Maybe that's the message for college students looking for something to do between classes. This helping someone out, it's fun. Jeremy Bernfeld contributed to our story on the America East Conference. You're listening to Only a Game. My conversation 2 weeks ago with Tabiti Boone, the fellow who chose to become a full-time father to his infant daughter rather than take advantage of a Division I basketball scholarship that would have required him to neglect that responsibility, has provoked lots of responses. One of them came in a phone call from Diana Barbaro, a literacy teacher at the Suffolk County House of Correction in Boston. Ms. Barbaro said she plans to share Tabiti Boone's story with the men with whom she works. Regular listeners will know that we always conclude the program with a final word, and a few weeks ago, a little girl who'd been entertained by the basketball antics of the Harlem Globetrotters filled that slot when I asked her whether she liked basketball. "I like soccer," she replied. "Remarkable lass, intelligent lass," said I, and that provoked Eric Anderson to email as follows. "My sweetheart and I thoroughly enjoy your shows. Closing the program 2 weeks ago, did I detect a subtle riff on Dickens' A Christmas Carol when a young girl told you she liked soccer? Yes, Mr. Anderson, you did, and for me, that was the best of times, or at least it was among them." Last week's program featured a story by Doug Trabu about how head coaches keep finding new jobs despite failing at their old ones. The story inspired Dave Schramm, who describes himself as a loyal listener, to suggest another story idea predicated on this hypothetical question. Would you rather put together a long and successful career, making the Hall of Fame but never winning a championship, or would you rather have an otherwise unremarkable career but a ring on your finger? Carol Liming, who lives in Indianapolis and characterizes herself as a proud Butler fan, was dismayed by analyst Charlie Pierce's comments about the final of the men's NCAA basketball tournament. "Charlie needs to be more gracious about those who do not win," Ms. Liming wrote. "Yes, Butler played their worst game in the finals, but to badmouth them is not the Butler way. The Horizon League, the conference in which Butler plays, put a full-page ad in the Indianapolis Star that read, 'What we will always remember won't be the misses, but the hit Butler became.' Shouldn't Charlie extend the same courtesy?" You can comment on what you hear on the program via our website, onlyagame.org. You can leave a comment on the listener line by calling 617-353-1860. And you can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Only A Game Radio. It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, Harvard University, whose summer school has courses for high school, college, and adults to earn academic credit and experience campus life, summer.harvard.edu, and Oliver Wyman, an international strategy consulting firm. With 3,000 professionals worldwide, Oliver Wyman serves global 1,000 companies. OliverWyman.com. This is NPR.
The record for tallest Lego tower has fallen. Not the tower, the record. Until this week, a Lego tower built in 2008 in Chile had topped the charts, but 6,000 Lego builders in Sao Paulo, Brazil, most of them children, have built a 500,000-piece, 102-foot tower, which has left the Chilean entry short by 9.8 inches. The tower qualifies as an example of international teamwork since the Lego company sent designers from Denmark to help with the construction. Before the tower in Chile arose, Toronto, Moscow, Sydney, Tokyo, Munich, and 48 other cities had been successively celebrated as the site of the tallest Lego tower. Mr. Trump, our nation turns its desperate eyes to you. I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, how long before the men's wheelchair division of the Boston Marathon is renamed the Ernst Van Dyke? But first, I'm joined by Charlie Pierce for our look at the week's news. Hello, Charlie.
Hey, Bill.
On Wednesday, Barry Bonds was found guilty of one charge of obstruction of justice, and Judge Susan Ilston declared a mistrial on three counts of perjury. You think the sole conviction will be thrown out at next month's hearing?
I have absolutely no idea, but I can't tell you how proud I am about all the people who have been pursuing the greatest scandal there absolutely ever was, that they managed to land a one count of obstruction of justice. I'll tell you the honest truth, it doesn't look like it makes a lot of sense because he was found guilty of obstructing justice by perjury. I have a feeling the judge may well throw up her hands and just throw this whole mess back for another round, which, of course, another $50 million here or there. Why shouldn't we chase down baseball players?
Last year's American League MVP, Josh Hamilton of the Texas Rangers, is out for at least 6 weeks with a broken arm. Hamilton initially blamed his third base coach for the injury. Any logic there?
That was strange because, you know, you almost never see that. And he did it almost instantly. Of course, he did it. He injured himself by sliding head first, which every old baseball guy will tell you is the easiest way to get hurt. So if on further reflection, he's owning his own part in this debacle, that's a good thing.
For the record, the third base coach didn't tell him to slide head first.
No.
He just said, why don't you run now?
If you ask, you know, a missionary in the wilds of Malaysia how baseball players slide, he will slide with his feet first.
Mm-hmm. The NHL playoffs are underway, and I would submit that the Buffalo Sabres Game 1 win over the Philadelphia Flyers on Thursday is an upset in the offing. What do you think?
Could be, because Ryan Miller, the goalie in Buffalo, is still probably the best goalie in the world, and the Flyers shot 35 shots at him and played very well and lost 1-0 anyway.
The NBA playoffs begin today. Nobody is supposed to derail the Bulls, the Celtics, the Spurs, or the Lakers in the early going, but which first-round series, if any, seems especially intriguing to you?
Well, I think the Celtics and the Knicks, simply because of the historical aspect and the fact that the Knicks are playing very well right now and the Celtics are not, and the Celtics haven't quite recovered from the trade of Kendrick Perkins, I think that could be a very intriguing series. And if it gets to a seventh game, the ABC pregame video might take 4.5 hours.
Tough week for the Lakers, Charlie. On Wednesday, NBA Commissioner David Stern announced that Kobe Bryant would be fined $100,000 for shouting a gay slur at an official. On Thursday, head coach Phil Jackson was tagged for $75,000 for publicly discussing the collective bargaining agreement. So, time for Jerry Buss to issue a gag order?
Yes, time for Jerry Buss to step in with the cool reason management techniques that have been his trademark ever since buying the Lakers. And, of course, it's important to remember that Phil Jackson was fined for admitting that there is going to be a lockout, which is, of course, always a management strategy. But, we're not supposed to talk
right.
about it.
I thought you were going to say, time for Jerry Buss to step in and say, me some, too. It's the only one who hasn't been fined. This week, a couple of former players and a former coach lately associated with a basketball program at the University of San Diego were charged with running a sports betting business as well as fixing games. Does this strike you as an isolated incident?
It doesn't. It doesn't. One of these things pops up every 4 or 5 years. We were overdue for one of these. I suspect it's not as isolated as the people running college sports would like you to believe it is. But oddly, I mean, they do pop up in odd places. I mean, they popped up at the University of Toledo. Now at the University of San Diego and at Tulane and even Boston College, you know, in the Henry Hill point-shaving case, Boston College wasn't a major basketball power then. My inclination is to believe that if it's going on at places like the University of San Diego, it's going on at higher-profile places.
The big story out of Augusta, Georgia on Sunday was the charge that Charles Schwartzel staged over the last 4 holes of the Masters. He birdied them all. Mr. Schwartzel won that tournament. Some say the best Masters finish ever. What do you think?
One of the best I ever saw. I mean, there was everything. There was thrill of victory, agony of defeat, Rory McIlroy hitting shots with camera views I can literally say I have never seen at Augusta in the 40 years I've been watching this tournament. There are places on that course I didn't know were there. And the only reason I know now is because that's where he hit his ball.
The NFL met on Thursday and Friday with representatives of the group formerly known as the Players Association. What do you figure went on in what we'll call the double secret judge-mandated silence mediation?
Oh, I think they probably sat at a table and stared at each other for 20 minutes and then ate donuts. I don't know. I think that the judge has the right idea, which is to basically get in a room and get this done if you can get it done. I just don't think they can get it done.
According to one resident of Barcelona, 4 times over the next 3 weeks, quote, everything else will be forgotten and life will come to a standstill in Madrid and Barcelona. Everything other than what?
Well, first of all, I don't think everything's going to come to a standstill at Barcelona because it's a perpetual motion party place. But Real Madrid and Barcelona will be playing 4 times. This is what I love about soccer. 4 times in different competitions.
Absolutely.
It's very cool. There's apparently the league they're in. There's the Spanish Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also they're in the middle of the UEFA Champions League.
Yeah, they're far past the middle. The winner of them goes on to play for the championship.
And there we are. So 4 times they will play. So conceivably, I guess, they each could win one thing, right?
Yes.
I mean, the math would work out that way. You know, I figure out, now I understand why people cover games. There's not much going on the field, so you have all this time in the press box to figure out who's leading what league.
I knew it. I knew you'd find a way to jab at soccer.
I mean, it's really hard. We have people in this country, namely people like me, who can't figure out the NHL playoffs. These people have to figure out 3 competitions mm-hmm. at the same time.
Charlie, the organizers of the Utrecht Marathon in the Netherlands have become upset that every year a Kenyan wins their race. How do you like the way they're attempting to address that circumstance?
They're offering the Kenyan runners 100 times less prize money than what a Dutch national who would cross the line first would win. Apparently, they're doing that because just banning the Kenyans would be against the law. Hmm. So, like, cheesy, xenophobic price rigging is okay, but banning them is against the law.
Yeah, I think
I hope the Kenyans win by 3 miles.
We've spoken before about creative promotion staged by minor league baseball teams, but you've got to take your hat off to one in Lowell, Massachusetts that will involve not only dogs, but goats and monkeys as well, don't you think?
I love the headline here. Dog riding monkeys herding goats is a cool minor league promotion. Any headline where you can get the phrase dog riding monkeys herding goats
is cool.
Is a cool thing.
I love it.
Apparently, it's exactly what it says. Yeah. Monkeys are riding dogs and herding goats.
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
they can't ride goats and herd dogs, I have no idea.
That's next.
Person, that's a next group, another group of monkeys. I have no idea.
And finally, Charlie, 10-time Olympic medalist Carl Lewis wants to be a New Jersey state senator. I don't know if he'll run an effective campaign, but I would guess he's certain to run a fast one.
You know what would be really cool? If Ben Johnson moved to New Jersey, established residency, became an American citizen, took all kinds of illegal campaign contributions, and beat him by 500 votes. That would be cool.
Charlie Pierce is the author of Idiot America. He joins me each week at this time on Only a Game as well. Thank you, Charlie.
Oh, by the way, Real Madrid is third in the American League East now, too.
And the Rockets! Red flag! Uh-oh. The bounce burst stinging it came through the night that a black was still.
Now, 27,000 runners are expecting to cross the start line of the 115th running of the Boston Marathon on Monday. Most will be high-level recreational runners fulfilling a dream of finishing one of the most storied marathons of the season. A few dozen will have the chance to actually win and be crowned with a laurel wreath, and one, just one, will have the chance to win his 10th Boston Marathon. Only a Game's Karen Given has our story.
5 days before Marathon Monday, many elite athletes staying at the Fairmont Copley Plaza are already sequestered in their hotel rooms to rest up for the big day. Ernst van Dijk just got off a plane from Cape Town, South Africa, but he isn't thinking of relaxing quite yet.
Tomorrow's a very busy day. I think tomorrow I've got 3 appearances at 3 different venues, so that's going to be a long day.
Maybe there's a reason why Van Dijk's not entirely focused on the race. He's won the Boston Marathon Elite Wheelchair Division 9 times, more than any other athlete in any division. He's won a gold medal at the Paralympics, and he's shaken the hand of Nelson Mandela. At 38 years old, he doesn't have a lot left to prove.
So, no pressure anymore. I've got the most wins in this race. Now it's about coming here and enjoying it. I wouldn't say I'm in the greatest form I've ever been. I'm getting older every year and I'm getting busier every year. I've trained hard, I've prepared well. I might not be as fast as I used to be, but you never know, maybe it's enough on the day.
In his first 8 wins in Boston, no one was able to challenge Van Dijk's simple strategy. Sprint out to a lead at the start and let the turns and hills of Boston's course take him out of view of his competitors. Once he was out of sight, out of mind, the pack had never caught Van Dijk, at least not until he went for his historic win number 9.
Halfway, the pack caught up to me, and then I got dropped through the Newton Hills. I was lying fourth by almost a minute, and then with the last 7K, I was able to close all the gaps and catch the last guy and then sprint for the line.
The commentators at Universal Sports were so unaccustomed to someone other than Van Dijk in the lead, they couldn't even tell the difference between him and his fellow South African, 8-time runner-up Krieger Skabor.
This may be Krieger Skabor looking at his face just for a second. Hard to tell. They're both getting set for their final burst down the street.
These are two of the biggest. It was Skabor out front. Van Dijk, the guy who's used to leading for all 26.2 miles, didn't take the lead until there were just 400 meters and 40 seconds to go.
Once they had dropped me, I thought, you know, maybe this isn't such a bad thing. if I don't win today. But then the fighting spirit in you kicks in. If somebody's going to win this, they're going to have to take it from me. I'm not going to give it to them. So it's going to be a race to the wire, and we'll have to see how it turns out.
Van Dyke is confident he'll get a 10th win in Boston. Maybe not this year, or even the next. He's got other things on his mind. A full-time job as the sports events manager at a university, his own company distributing sports equipment to the disabled in Africa, a prize-winning collection of koi, and his 2.5-year-old daughter, who he says makes time fly out the window. Bright and early on Thursday morning, the ever-busy Van Dyke is at the Riverview School in Sandwich on Cape Cod. Riverview is a school for kids and young adults with language, learning, and cognitive disabilities. Riverview students are also one of the best audiences around, giving Van Dyke a standing ovation before he's even said a word.
So please, let's clap and welcome.
As photos from his life are projected onto a screen behind him, Van Dyke talks about growing up in apartheid South Africa, before anti-discrimination laws of any kind. People with disabilities were not guaranteed equal access to education or employment. When Van Dyke was born, without legs and with other physical challenges, the doctor told his parents to put him into an institution and forget about him. Instead, they took him home and encouraged their young son's natural athletic streak.
I'm still very young, but I've learned a few lessons in life. And I'm going to share three short ones with you before we go to questions and answers.
Van Dyke tells the students to figure out their purpose in life, bounce back from adversity, and strive to maintain balance. Before too long, it's time for those questions and answers.
I just like to say that slideshow of yours is awesome. Sorry you can't walk. I just wish you could.
I actually can walk.
You're special the way you are.
Thank you.
Van Dyke is special the way he is, but he can and does walk using prosthetics, which sometimes causes confusion among racing fans and hotel staff. He's used to questions and comments like these. Most of the time, kids want to know about the crashes, which certainly happen, sometimes at as much as 50 miles per hour.
Can we all thank Ernst very much?
Riverview gives Van Dyke another standing ovation before each and every student lines up for an autograph and sometimes a comment or two from the 9-time Boston Marathon champ.
I've actually been to South Africa before.
Really?
I was in a town called Johannesburg.
Oh, that's not a town, that's a city.
Another Riverview student, Madison McAllister, is, in her own words, freaking out to meet Van Dyke.
I heard him speak today. He's like a good. And when after he was done, I looked to come pictures of him. It looks pretty good. I'm just so proud of him. What an awesome job he's doing. He's a great athletic person. I hope he wins the marathon on Monday.
Van Dyke and his entourage take a short drive down the road to the Spalding Rehabilitation Center in Sandwich. Spalding has been sponsoring Van Dyke for the past 7 years after his previous sponsor, a German company, dropped him after he failed to medal in the 1996 Atlanta Paralympics. Van Dyke tells the patients and caregivers at Spalding that when he lost that sponsorship, he felt like a failure. But years later, when his story was featured one Sunday evening on South Africa's equivalent of 60 Minutes, he learned to think of his success in different ways.
And by the Tuesday, I got a phone call from a lady in a little town by the coast in the middle of nowhere. And she said, well, that night that my story went on TV, she was watching it, but the TV was on mute, and she had a loaded gun on her coffee table. And she was ready to take her own life. And then she saw my story, and it drew her attention. She put the volume up and she listened. And she was calling me to thank me, because when she saw my story, she realized that the few things that had gone wrong in her life was actually nothing. And she had no reason to take her own life. And she just wanted to thank me.
After that call, Van Dyke says, he no longer measured his success by how many races he won or how many sponsorships he earned, but instead by the number of lives he touched. Maureen Banks, president of Spalding Cape Cod and the chief operating officer of the Spalding Rehab Network, believes that's part of how Van Dyke wins so many races.
I mean, I talk a lot about energy, and I think Ernst doing this type of work, which inspires other people, also gives him the energy to continue doing it. So I think it's very much a partnership.
And unlike that German company, Banks says Spalding's not going to cancel Van Dyke's sponsorship if he doesn't win his 10th Boston Marathon on Monday.
No, 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 no. You heard Ernst talk this morning about there's many ways of winning and many ways of feeling successful. And I think it's the same. I mean, Ernst is a winner for us.
The marathon start for Van Dyke and the rest of the elite wheelchair athletes is scheduled for 9:17 on Monday morning. A little less than an hour and a half later, someone will cross the finish line first in Boston's Copley Square. For Only a Game, I'm Karen Given.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is John Perotti. Our intern is Mark Filippino. Special thanks this week to Jeremy Bernfeld. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To view our photo gallery, subscribe to the Only a Game podcast, listen to archived shows and stories, or learn more about our weekly music selections, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Only a Game Radio. Our final word comes from Game of Shadows author Lance Williams, who summarizes the Barry Bonds trial thusly.
Great trial. Really fun.
And the wonderful thing is, we're going to do it again. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at mecfound.org. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need, on the web at rwjf.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.